It's Varked brings you
Phoenix City.
Hello and welcome to Phoenix City. Joined in the room by Dave Cameron.
Hello,
Frosty.
Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
Frosty is here.
Yeah.
Frosty, where's your microphone?
It's at home.
It's at home. Frosty, he's sitting with us and unable to join in because he didn't bring his microphone to the podcast recording.
To the only house which doesn't have spare microphones.
We've launched almost immediately into recording this about 1 minute after Frosty arrived. He last arrived without equipment. So he's sitting there with a...
I'm glad we waited for you.
Yeah. And we did. We did wait for you.
He's got a deep spring. What flavor is that? Lemon lime bitters, something? Yep. That he's... He's gonna sit down. Lemon lime and orange. Sorry, listeners. He's gonna sit there and be serenaded by our dulcet tones while he listens to the podcast get recorded live.
This is actually a bonus for him because he still gets the time away from home.
True.
He gets the night off,
and he doesn't have to
do anything. He can just sit in the rocking chair and quietly drift away.
And to be fair, if he gets rolled up enough to rant about something, one of us will probably hand him a microphone and let him go for a bit.
Well, it's going
to
be you because you're closest to him.
Yeah. I mean, you could bring the rocking... you could sit between me and Dave and just lean in if you want, but...
Well, you could bring the rocking chair over. That'd be absolutely fine too. It does move.
See how you feel as we go. If you keep wanting to chime in, then just come over here and join us on the couch. There is that one thing that you're going to want to talk about that you've just mentioned. But hey, let's talk about when Phoenix versus MacArthur, what are they called? Rams.
Bulls.
Fuck.
That is not the first time you've said that.
No. Why do I keep wanting to call them the Rams anyway? MacArthur Bulls, FC.
You know what though? I do too, and I don't know why.
I don't know why either. Why? Is there another team called the MacArthur Rams? I don't know. Frosty knows the answer, but we can't hear him. So, it was a 1-1 draw, thanks to a goal to each team and a red card that shouldn't have been. Where do you want? I haven't seen this.
You haven't seen it?
No. So I should probably hand my mic over to Frosty.
That's actually probably a good idea.
I've seen the goals. I've seen the red card, so I can talk about those things. But just general game vibe, I can't really chime in on. But from what I've heard, we had a pretty good first half.
We were good. We were very good. It was certainly a nice surprise. I thought we played some excellent football in the first half. Recycling possession was good. I thought David Ball was excellent. Possibly one of the best games I've seen him play in a yellow shirt.
So sort of walk back Cam's positivity 5 paces. I think we were decent. We were deserving of 3 points.
I don't think
we were excellent.
I think
this looked like an early season performance, but an early season performance against a team we were better than.
I would change that by saying current A-League compared to previous A-League. That was the performance of a team that will comfortably make the playoffs and will probably be in top three.
You mean in terms of this season?
In terms of this season.
Okay. I'm willing to accept that, but I don't think this was, you know, an excellent game. Ball was good again.
Game. We were excellent though.
But I again don't know that I think it's his best performance. I think we were decent and deserved all three. We were on top of them for the majority of the game, and really the only thing that brought them back into it was the red card.
It was literally the only thing that brought. Yep. There was up to that point, they had nothing at all.
And even after that point, they didn't actually have a hell of a lot.
No.
Yeah, so it was incredibly disappointing.
I mean, do you want to just jump to the red card?
But there's not really anything else to talk about in the game unless we want to talk about the goal.
Talk about the goal first.
We talk about the goal.
Yep, goal was good, Frosty says, chiming in.
You've seen the goal. It's the one thing you can talk about.
I've seen it, but can I remember it? Absolutely not. I got far too
wild. Do you remember who scored it?
David Ball. It was a cutback from James McGarry. After Uli played him through, I believe it
down
was.
The left-hand
side, it was incredibly well worked.
They gave Uli a pile of space.
Yeah.
And he just picked out the pass perfectly for a really good run from McGarry.
And it was very reminiscent of a lot of last season's goals between kind of David Ball and Hooper, particularly early involvement as well. But it reminded me of those goals where it was one of those two Englishmen setting each other up a few times on the break and things like that. It just looked like that Phoenix team again, which excites me, and hopefully we can keep heading towards what it looked like at the peak of last season. But yeah, well worked. Good finish from Ball. We've seen Phoenix players miss those umpteen times. So yep. But yeah, impressive from James McGarry. I think he's, from what I've seen, which isn't a lot, he's definitely a better player than he was when he left the Phoenix, which we knew was going to be the case. Yeah. But it's nice to see that that's actually the case on the field.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep, that's it. It was just a really, really nice goal. I was really impressed with it.
Yep. My only criticism, and it's not of the goal itself, it's actually that we probably could have had about five of these in that first half, where we were getting into that space that McGarry ended up getting into. And when we were looking for the cutback, there was just no one there. And I found that surprising from a tactical sense, and it felt like that's where I expect Hamed to be. That's 100%. The kind of striker he is, and that's where I expect him to be. But that is obviously not what we're asking him to do, because it was incredibly rare he was in that spot. David Ball was occupying that spot a hell of a lot more, and we see that with the goal we ended up getting. But looking at his highlight reel and knowing the sort of player he is, that's where I expected him to be in the role I expected him to be playing, and we're not using him in that way. So
I hope
it'll be interesting to see how that develops, whether that continues to be a tactic and whether it pays dividends with him operating in a slightly different space, or whether we switch to having him in that, you know, poacher role in the middle there, just waiting for it to come to his feet.
Yep, I hope that's the case. I really do. I hope it's he's asked to do a different role rather than he was supposed to be there and wasn't.
Yeah.
And I think it's too early in the performances to see if that's the case, but I genuinely think it's possible. It could go either way at the moment.
Frosty here. I think that they're using Hamed to drag the back line back, and that's why they ended up sitting all the way back deep into their 6-yard boxes. Hamed's there and they're worried about him. Leaves a big old gap at the top. So it's really up to Ball to either drop off and not try and go on the shoulder, or Uli's got to get there because, you know, all the other guys are either playing wide or a bit further back. So, yeah, I mean, Uli's going to get those, I hope.
No, Bally will. Then, as Dave said, because that's where he was playing.
Well, yeah, I noticed that he wasn't. It was very much an afterthought to drop off. He got to the spot before he started slowing down, and that's why it went behind him, and he kind of had to fish it around. He actually did really well to finish it in the end. But if he's thinking about taking that pocket, he's got to think of it early and just slow right down, give McGarry or whoever a big space to cut it back into, and he's going to have easy shots if he keeps doing that.
So I don't think Uli will get there, because I think Uli will be playing a traditional 10 role. He will be that creator, so I don't think that's the space that he will get into. He'd be more around the top of the box playing the passes in than he would be in the box finishing off those poaching positions.
Did Bally, Hamed and Uli all start?
Yeah, they sure did.
Yep.
Yeah, Hamed came off at halftime. Oh, maybe just after halftime because of the blood.
Blood, yeah.
Yeah, he got it was an innocuous, you know, just head clash from a challenge. But they drew a fair bit of blood and they just couldn't stop it bleeding, so he had to come off, basically.
It's a good sign that he was able to keep playing, because you guys talked about on last week's podcast that you were wondering if he had more than 30 minutes in him. And obviously, if they had him playing the first half and then keep it on going, he had it in him.
And I think he probably got about 10 minutes less than they planned. But as you say, because of the blood, they're like, nah, let's just do it now. I think it was about the 50th-ish minute that they dragged him. I think they probably would have been looking for an hour out of him and went,
yeah,
this is too problematic, let's just do it now. But he certainly didn't look like he was gassed yet. I think they were all expecting a bit more. And yeah, so that's a good sign.
Yep.
Yeah, and you don't want to risk it either.
And the fact that Uli is starting and getting decent minutes as well says that, you know, whatever match fitness concerns there were or whatever that was is not a major issue, that we can get a solid number of minutes out of Uli as well.
And he only got dragged because of the red. Yeah. Like he was, unless, again, that came slightly earlier than they were planning it, but like it didn't look, that wasn't a planned substitution. He got pulled because of the red, probably, again, 5 or 10 before he was supposed to be.
Yeah, we're skirting around it, and let's just talk about it. I cannot be bothered bleeping out expletives in this section that I'm sure are going to come out.
So this is your fair warning.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. That is just the worst call. If you haven't seen it by now, I think it's on lots of socials, Fox Football socials. I'm sure it's on YouTube on the highlights. But Alex Rufer gets fouled quite badly, and as he's fallen to ground, after being stood on and clearly in pain, makes some contact with the socks of whoever tackled him. Do you know the name of that person?
I do not.
Sean Rowe.
Yes, it is.
The slow motion of VAR has deemed that this was a lash out and violent conduct and therefore a red card.
I want to defend VAR here before I lay into this for being ridiculous, because before the red was awarded, I said we're going to get a red card here because the ref stopped it and awarded a yellow card, and it obviously wasn't for the tackle. The referee thought he had seen a lash out, right? Now, we know, having seen subsequent highlights, that that's not the case at all. But I think the VAR's gone back here and said, well, if you've seen that as a lash out, I think it might be a red card offence because it's not on the ball. It's clearly on the border of violent conduct if there is, in fact, him on the ground kicking out like that because he makes contact. And I think what the VAR has pointed out here may have been, did you realise he made contact? Thinking the referee has awarded a yellow card for lashing out and not getting him. And so that's why when he gave a yellow, I'm like, wait a second, if he's seen that and thinks he got him, this would probably be red because we're not looking at a yellow card offence. And so when VAR came up, I was not at all surprised to see that they were looking at potentially giving a red card. But then you see the replay and it's like, well, obviously not. But I can, that's the only way I can imagine to slightly defend VAR is to say that maybe there was discussion that yellow card was for not making any contact and the VAR said, well, he did. So I think you should have a look.
Yeah. So David Dome has posted on his Twitter feed, and I assume this is relatively accurate, but I don't know if some of the nuance of the conversations he's had between himself and the referees board had come through on these tweets. But he said, spoke to Rest Boss this afternoon. He's admitted they got it wrong and MacArthur has spoken twice in being referred to the VAR and again for the red. The appeal is very different. So let's talk about the appeal way later on because worry about that. But the fact that he's saying there that there was wrong to be referred to the VAR is interesting because, first of all, we don't refer to him as the VAR. The VAR picks up on them and says to the referee, you should probably look at this. So there's already some weird language being used there. I don't think anybody can say that this should be a red card.
No, I
don't think that's what we're discussing here.
I've heard a lot of people saying they thought it was Genro being referred.
And I would be much more comfortable with that.
Yeah, for studs up into the ankle.
Yeah.
And, like, genuinely, that's when you see the replay, you're like, well, that's a red card. If there's a red card anywhere in that, it's the studs into the ankle. And to be fair, I thought they were both going for the ball and it just happened to get him that way. And, yes, it would have hurt and didn't look pleasant, but...
Yeah.
That it didn't look like there was any malicious intent in any part of that whatsoever.
Yeah, malicious intent is a bit of a...
That's different.
It's just a different thing. What you're looking for here
is... Don't be pedantic, you know what I meant.
No, I'm genuinely not because this is what I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, intent doesn't matter.
Is serious foul play versus violent conduct?
Yeah.
What they ruled on the field was that Alex River committed violent conduct.
Yeah.
What you're talking about, what the red should have been for, is serious foul play, which are two very different things.
Correct.
One is involved in a tackle, doesn't mean you need to go for it, but if you... go over the ball completely unintentionally, collect someone's shin, you're gone, serious foul play, and that's a one-match ban.
Yep.
Foul violent conduct is generally a three-match ban or more, which is when you kick somebody, you punch somebody,
kick
you lash
out. Off the ball, et cetera, which is what I thought was happening here because I thought he was giving a yellow because he didn't think contact was made, but it should have been upgraded to red for violent conduct because he did get him. And, there's violent conduct requires there to basically be intent. You have to be trying to be violent in order to be violent. And it has to be off the ball. It has to not be, you know, a footballing challenge type thing.
Yeah. And this all
kicking
happened,
out on the ground is definitely that.
Yeah. But this all happened literally during the tackle.
Yeah.
Like he hadn't even fallen to the ground yet.
No. And his eyes are closed.
Exactly.
And, you know,
Like he's if he'd fallen to the ground, both players have fallen to the ground, they're getting up, and then Rufa makes this contact? Yes, okay, maybe that's a red then. But the fact that it's happened during the tackle, Rufa's not even on the ground yet, neither is the other player, I don't think. There's no eyes open. Rufa has no idea where anybody's legs are. It's just, it's not a red card. And I don't understand how
it's the VAR... It's not even a yellow for Rufa. There is no yellow there for Rufa. Rufa has got fouled... He has gone to ground and rolled because he's in pain with his eyes closed without any understanding where anybody is.
Yeah.
There is nothing in that passage of play that Rufa has done wrong. There's no card there for him.
Yeah. The threshold there is it's a reckless. He acted in a way that had no regard for the safety of his opponent, I think is how it's worded in the laws.
That's serious foul play, though, not violent conduct.
Is it? Right. I believe. Serious foul play. That's what I'm talking about. Serious foul play. Yes,
but again,
which is not what he was given his card for.
Yeah.
And there was, but there is nothing there to suggest that.
No.
There's not, like, he's not. When they talk, we kind of come back to the review panel, obviously, I see nothing in there that any reasonable ref would give a yellow for to Roofer at all.
Yeah.
Nothing at any point. So the fact that he's got a red and is still, you know, when it comes to the MRP and is still now has a suspension, I actually think is wrong.
I will agree with that, but that's a different point. But this is where I come back to. I think what's happened here is the ref on the field believed in real time that he saw Roofer kick out. Yep. And so the only thing he was really looking for as a referee who had already made a decision that he thought he had seen a player kick out from that position at another player was he was checking to see that there was contact, and there was. I don't think he spent enough time looking at that to be like, oh, did he look at him? How did his knee bend? How much kick out was there? I don't think he was looking at any of that. I think he already believed wrongly that he had seen Roofer in real time kick out.
Yeah.
And so what he was confirming in this is actually, oh, he did get him. And that's what has caused him to upgrade from a yellow to a red. Now, obviously that's wrong, but I think that's how the series of events played out. And why they got this so wrong is because the referee on the field thought he saw something and didn't bother confirming that element. He went with, I've already seen him kick out. Did he make contact or not?
That's the only reasonable series of events that makes me understand what's happened here.
Yeah, and I've been thinking about it for days, and that's where I've landed. That I can't see another way you watch that video and go, this is why I've given a red card there.
No other explanation has any indication of why VAR got involved.
Yeah.
There is no reason for VAR to be getting involved here unless you think the tackle itself was a red, which I don't think it was. I think it's on the low end of red, but that's not something that you get involved with as a VAR.
Which way did the foul go?
It was towards Phoenix. So that's where the foul went. But that is the only way I can see why VAR would get involved, because there is no reason when you watch this footage in real time to think that he's lashed out. You don't go, I think I've seen a red card there.
There's
nothing there to say that.
Yeah.
I think it's an example. If you have picked that up, and that's what I started with, and you correctly cut me off to make that point, Dave, is that they're watching this in slow motion. And when you're in slow motion, every single little frame looks like a massive movement. But actually, that happened in 1/24th of a second, potentially 1/50th of a second if they're using high frame rate. But there's just so much more information in there. And if you look at it in real time, two players just fall to the ground. That's all that happens there. There's nothing else there at all. You need to. Rugby had this problem when they introduced looking for double movements for putting the ball over line. Everything was double movement when you watch it in slow mo, because there's no smooth motion anymore. And that's just bringing me back to a point that I made about VAR in the past, where actually you're looking at things out of context of where they happened. The very first penalty that was given against us in VAR was that one against Sydney a few years ago, where there's a handball right before it. There's push in the back that caused the handball right before it, and they looked at the handball in isolation. And you're right here, Dave. They've looked in that little movement. Did he make contact? Did he not make contact in isolation? And it just doesn't work. And it's just, I don't want to get on a big VAR rant apart from this specific incident, but it's just happening time and time again.
I think if you're going to look at it, you need to actually look at it.
Yeah, look at the whole thing.
I think there's a lot of criticism around VAR taking too long, blah, blah, blah. So there's probably some directives out there around not overanalyzing this stuff. But I think even in slow motion, the way Roofer's knee moves is not, you know, in slow motion, you can see he's not kicking out. There is a very tiny movement of his knee. It is not a pronounced lashing out in any way, shape, or form. His leg is basically straight, and it remains basically straight. You know, it is clearly not kicking out. But I think, you know, we definitely have talked about a lot of stuff, like he's falling to the ground and stuff. We have seen incidents in world football where people are falling and they manage to turn the roll into an obvious attempt to lash out. So I don't think necessarily those are, you know, signs of innocence. But I think you watch the entire incident here, and it does paint the picture of no intent. His eyes are closed. The movement of his knee is minimal. It's mostly a natural movement, you know, and he's fouled first. You know, there are a range of reasons here that this is clearly him hurt and falling to the ground.
That's the thing.
Not him falling to the ground and kicking out.
His eyes are closed. because he's grimacing from the pain.
Yeah.
Like, it just doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And that will bring us to the one match suspension that he has now, where to get that red card overturned, which hasn't happened since 2017, guess which player got his red card overturned?
Borussia.
Wasn't even the Jura one. And you need to prove beyond doubt that no referee under any circumstances would show a yellow card for that.
This is where I have problems.
And I don't think you can show a yellow card for that because he doesn't lash out. Like, yeah. The referee on the field did, and it was upgraded, which I think is why they haven't done anything, because they've said the referee saw the thing, but he's committed violent conduct, and they've said he's committed violent conduct, and he hasn't. Like, you either punch somebody or you don't. Like, he didn't kick the person.
Yeah, this is where I have some questions for you with your referee training, but also I'm gonna put it out there to the referees that I know listen to this as well, because there are a few elements here that I think you've covered reasonably well.
Thanks,
Dave. That lead to my questions.
Yeah.
So you're right that it has to be no yellow card could have been awarded. Now, what I want to understand is, does it have to be for that offence?
Yeah, I don't
because
know.
You, I can see an argument here where if you had given the serious foul play card, you might talk about reckless, and you might say some of the actions he made were reckless, and therefore a yellow card might have been warranted for those. But that's an entirely different offence. He was given a red card for violent conduct. And this is where I could be wrong, but I don't believe you can get a yellow card for violent conduct.
No, it's a red card.
You can
offense.
Get a red or nothing.
Yeah.
And we all agree, and the match review panel agree, he did not deserve a red card for violent conduct. So I do not know, and I suspect the rules are probably not that great on this, about whether or not any other yellow card offence having occurred remotely near the offence you were given the red for could in fact mean you still have to serve your suspension.
Yeah.
Or whether or not it needs to be, could you have given a yellow for this offence, but you gave the red, you know, it's a matter of opinion, of degree of difficulty, if you will, of what you did. And the offence he's been given is a red or nothing. And everyone has agreed he did not commit that offence. Therefore, no card should have been awarded. It seems blindingly simple to me.
The answer, Dave, is that I don't know.
Yeah, which is why I said I'm willing to put it out there to the other rest, because I think if there's an argument, you know, like let's say you punch someone in the face and get a red for that, but you swore as well, right? And then it turns out actually you didn't punch him in the face, but they go, oh, but we could have given you a yellow for the, you know, the swearing, so we're going to let the suspension stand.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that is the way that this is meant to be. I don't think we're meant to review the incident and seek out any potential yellow cards we could have found
off the hook, basically.
And go, oh, you didn't commit that one, but we found another. You know, like, I don't think that's what this is for.
So what the MRP has said in their ruling was that they downgraded the offence from assault on a player down to serious unsporting conduct, which wasn't committed, by the way. Like, that didn't happen.
No.
But those are two very separate things.
They are correct.
Moving from violent conduct to serious foul play.
Yeah, which...
And that is not correct. Like, that is not what happened here. But this implies that you can.
This implies
that the threshold is based on, would you get a yellow for anything here rather than just the offence that was committed.
It just makes it feel like we're going to find a way to get the ref off the hook for making a mistake.
Well, I don't think it's the ref off the hook.
That's what it reads to me.
It's an attempt to not re-referee the game. I would be very surprised if this referee and this VAR, I think it was Stephen Lucas and Chris Griffiths-Jones, respectively, will have games this weekend.
You don't have to respectively them.
I don't think, fair, they're not going to have games this weekend. They're going to be dropped and they're going to have this fixed by a week off and some training around how to do things properly, and then they come back to it. But I think it's upholding the fact that we don't re-referee games via the MRP.
Except that I think Cam's right here. I think they've looked to cover their ass, because I think within those rules there is the ability for them to have said, we don't think a yellow card could have been awarded here. I think they had that option available to them.
They did, but...
And they chose not to, because I think, like, you've said that decision shows that they've downgraded it to a different offence. I don't think that necessarily confirms that the laws of the game and the disciplinary guidelines and all of that that come out from FIFA necessarily intended that. What we're seeing is that is how Australia are going to implement those rules, and New Zealand implements those same rules as well, and you see it in club football, and you know the disciplinary panels here for a club game have to apply that same standard. But I would be reasonably confident you can find jurisdictions reading those same rules and applying them the way that is Red card for violent conduct? Nope, didn't happen. No card.
Yeah, but the thing there is that to the best of my knowledge, FIFA don't have regulations ready to go for leagues to do their own thing. Things around so they
no,
they,
but
they go from the teams walking out onto the pitch to the teams leaving the pitch is the laws of the game, and then it is within the organisations themselves to come up with their regulations. And that's a point I'm going to come to soon.
So the disciplinary guideline you're talking about of. You have to have had no offence worthy of a yellow card is a FIFA guideline.
Is it?
Correct.
Because I believe
that's what I'm saying is the same rule we apply in New Zealand because it actually comes from FIFA disciplinary guidelines. Gotcha. Right. And then obviously there are local ways of implementing that.
Yeah, you can at a local level overrule that.
Correct.
You can choose to do that, whereas you can't choose to not show red cards for violent conduct on the field.
Exactly.
I mean, you can set with a level of where exactly. you think the threshold
but,
is. But
yeah. what you will find is almost every nation, and this is to the best of my knowledge, true of both Australia and New Zealand, we haven't amended that. What we do is we have different benchmarks, for example, of how long a suspension will be for certain offences. Yeah. But in terms of looking at whether or not the offence occurred and whether or not a suspension should be served, we apply that same measure that comes from FIFA, which says if no yellow card should have been awarded, basically the decision was completely wrong or mistaken identity occurred, then we can overturn it.
But the thing is, one of the reasons why we haven't seen a red card overturned since 2017 is because of VAR. We fix things like mistaken identity or that didn't occur on the field now rather than waiting until afterwards to fix it.
At this level. But the same committees are what are viewing club football, for example.
Yeah, but I'm talking purely about the A-League in this context and not even the W-League or the New Zealand Leagues, purely the A-League. But we haven't seen any of this because they fix that at the field level. If someone's punched somebody and the referee doesn't know who it is, he'll go and ask the VAR to tell him who it was. Or he'll show it, or like, I don't know if they have to like skirt their way around the rules by showing it to somebody and then going, was that the right person? Don't know whether they can just go and ask who it was. But
if it's a punch, then the VAR can probably say, I believe a red card offence is good.
Yeah, come and look at this. But we fix those things on the field now, which is fine until the point that your VAR gets it wrong on the field, which is what happened here at no matter like how you look at it, how they got it wrong, they still got it wrong. So it's kind of that check and balance that we now rely on, and that's why the threshold to overturn something after the game is still so high remains, and it's because of the thing that is fundamentally flawed on the field. Frosty wants to chime in if you want to pass the mic over to him. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, Dave. I do agree with your point about you don't want to re-referee the game on the field.
Yeah.
However, with red card offences, there's suspension.
Yeah.
And that's what the problem is. It's kind of like it doubles down. It's like, yep, a mistake has been made on the field. Everyone's willing to accept that because players make mistakes, referees make mistakes, video refs make mistakes. That happens. And it affects the game. However, when, you know, you get the suspension happening for, in this particular case, an unwarranted offence, it now affects two games. And that's the bit I don't like. I'm kind of with Dave on this whole thing of like, why are we kind of tiptoeing around? It's like, you know, everyone's saying a mistake was made, but now it's going to cost us a game. And I'm positive that Domi and the Knicks and the A-League refs have just kind of gone, okay, bit of a negotiation here. Look, we'll knock it, you know, don't criticise us. We'll knock it down to a week. And everyone's kind of like, we crack on.
Well, I think the Phoenix also understand that there is a lot of resource to put into an appeal for that for very little recourse. I mean, as particularly there is very clear examples from previous times in the A-League. One I remember, what's his name? Fashini. What's his first name? Mount Victory player. It's like, this was going back to like 2012, but he got sent off and Victory appealed it. And they upgraded the suspension from one game to three games for frivolous appeal. Yep. It got worse because it turns out he was away on Oliver's duty, and those games that he missed for Oliver's duty didn't count. So it ended up being like six games off at the time, which was hilarious. But there is the frivolous appeal thing in there to stop people from coming in and abusing the system. Because you punch somebody, why would your team not appeal that just in case you get off? That would be a bad thing to have in the system.
I think when you've had an apology from the head of referees
saying that
then slap them with a frivolous appeal would be ridiculous.
Yeah, it would be.
So I don't think that's your problem here, but I think the issue of like precedent within their own rules is a problem for them. but actually they ignore it all the time. Remember the season where they were suspending players for diving? They weren't even getting carded, and they went back and they were suspending players for dives that basically hadn't been spotted during the game, and they were suspending them. How many times could we still be doing that every season?
Yeah.
You know, if we're talking about precedent here, there is a lot of precedent for them to do all sorts of things. And I think my problem here is not that they've suspended him, because I think it shows a reasonably extraordinary turnaround to have downgraded it from 3-1, because this is extremely rare for that to happen.
Yeah.
But I think given they were willing to make that back down, they should have just, you know,
gone the whole way.
Yeah. Basically. Stuck up for the player and made the right call, which is he should not receive any suspension. And I think within the rules, there was mechanism they could have done that.
Yeah.
Said, we do not believe this player has committed any violent conduct offence, therefore we rescind the card. They could have done that.
I think
they've hedged their bets, and I think it's piss weak.
Yeah. One of the things that means that they must feel they have grounds to do that is it affects the second game much less significantly than the first game. So the game that he's now missing, he gets replaced by another player on the field, whereas the 30 minutes that we played without him, that wasn't the case. So it's much less significant now overturning that ban than it was when they got it wrong on the field.
Less,
so
but more than should be applied.
I agree.
100%.
I agree with both of you, and I'm kind of riffing on what Frosty was saying before, but it's not the same. It's not like we're missing the player for another 90 minutes that we can have him back for. We put someone else on that field and they can do a decent enough job.
The same applies to someone who punched someone though, right?
Mm.
They're able to replace the player, so therefore the punishment is less. You know, like, wow. I think if we're going to go down that route, arguing that suspensions of games actually aren't that big a deal, then why is that the punishment for red card offences?
That's not what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying, because I do not agree with it. What I'm saying is that's why they will feel that just making it a one game and not shaking the boat in terms of what we do with suspensions too much is what they're doing. They feel like they can get away with that because of this fact.
Yeah, I stand by piss weak. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
It's
100%.
Yeah.
Rufus should not be suspended at all.
No.
The punishment he received by being sent off on the game day was worse than, like, and obviously directly impacted on the result of that game. We lost 2 points because of that. That's more than the punishment than he deserved for being fouled.
Yeah, and I think we can go back to remember the first game we played. Pat won't have seen it, but there was Luke Bratton, I believe, sprigged one of our players. I can't remember who it was in the side of the knee. It was at knee height, and he got a yellow card for it. If we're talking this contact made by Rufa here is worthy of a VAR referral, is worthy of a 1 week suspension, was worthy of a red card. You know, why are knee high studs that are being given a yellow card not being reviewed? Like, I think there is so much inconsistency in the system that they need to step up and go, actually, the system's broken, let's fix it.
What?
And that's not going to happen by hedging your bets and making piss-weak decisions when you get it wrong. Like, you've got that head of referees calling up clubs and apologising, saying we got it wrong, and then no one is actually trying to fix it. They're just going, we'll apologise next time, we'll stand down one referee, we'll retrain that referee, we won't actually publicly do any of that, we'll just let it happen quietly behind the scenes. To fix it, someone has to take ownership of fixing it.
So one of the questions I had off the back of this that I asked Domi on Twitter and he replied was, now that the clubs are in charge, can they change this rule?
No.
Or does it fall under the wording in that press release that Football Australia is still in charge of regulating the league?
Yeah.
He came back and said that no, it falls under their regulation.
Yeah, because it is FIFA, as FIFA. I was saying before.
And this new separated league system, Football Australia have no reason to go and change the system. They have no reason to get in there and change the way that they do things to help the clubs out. Like, they will just go alongside with what FIFA says and take that box and not rock the boat in terms of anything that gets very political very quickly once you start going against FIFA. So they have no reason to do it. I see Domi in his last tweet yesterday. I'm using Domi's tweets a lot because it's the only information we're really getting. But he's saying that they're now looking at an interim process between the match, which is part of the league run by the clubs, and the MRP, which is the FA, Football Australia, to sit in between them and say, do we feel like this incident should be referred on rather than automatically getting referred on because of the red card? In this case, you could say, no, we don't think it gets referred on because the MRP has no system in place to to turn things from a red card to nothing, because they're never going to do it. And so do you have that there? That opens a whole can of worms of, like, if we have players going around punching each other, can the club just go, yeah, nah, we'll just have our best players on the field next week? Like,
it would raise an interesting process question, because the referees are still managed and appointed by the FA, I believe.
I don't know, but I would assume so.
So they would still have a team card, in theory, that they submit, being a Football Australia referee who refereed a game.
Yeah.
So I don't know that the clubs, because of the nature of the competition, could go, oh, actually, don't hand on your team card, which is kind of what you're asking there. Like, if a red card has been registered against a player and they have committed an offence, the FA is still going to want to suspend them.
I mean, regardless of the
league's process, exactly. If you know what I mean.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Cap 5, we used to get the let's just keep the cards between ourselves, boys, and that's what that feels like.
Yeah. Which is different if you've got an appointed referee, right? An appointed referee wouldn't and shouldn't be indulging in that. Whereas,
well, I will tell you, you've got someone referees definitely have at, when I was playing football at Cat 5.
If you've got a referee who, you know, for example, Pat, when he was, you know, still qualified, you could get him to come down and referee a game as a mate rather than coming down as an appointed referee. Yeah, and, exactly. You know, that's the difference there, which is.
Yeah. I mean, Domi ends the street by saying being looked at now, and there are clearly issues there depending on how they do it. But yeah.
There'll be a framework that they can work towards within the new ownership that, like, and there will be things that they can do, but the scope will be small where the governance of the referees comes from.
Well, and I think, though, the most obvious place you can probably fix this without messing with everything else is in VAR implementation. The league, I think, can have much more control over what is in and out of scope for VAR to look at. I think that doesn't have to mess with the laws of the game. It doesn't have to mess with standard disciplinary procedures. It doesn't have to mess with any of that. You can say, actually, the VAR has power to look at these things that wouldn't have traditionally been within scope, within this league only, you know? And that might be the way of fixing it.
I'm not sure you can do that, because IFAB's pretty clear that VAR can only get involved for goal or no goal, penalty, no penalty, red cards, and mistaken identity. Like, that's the only four things that he can get involved, he or she could get involved.
Is that from FIFA?
IFAB, which is separate to FIFA, but like the International Football Advisory Board.
Yep, so they can get involved in less, but not more?
Pretty much. You can set the threshold for where you want that red card to be. Like, if you want Argentina League, where it's a high threshold and you have lots of tackles, or Premier League, for example, that are would be reds in other places, but just yellows in this game. You can do that, but you can't say you're also going to look at offsides when just general play, or you're going to look at who whether it's a corner or a goal kick. You can't go around doing that.
Well, so this is where I disagree, because I think you could. You just have to not do it using the officially appointed VAR. The video could be used to analyze all sorts of things. You just don't have to have the appointed
can of worms,
VAR.
Yeah. Can of worms. Lots of worms going on involved here. I think it's easier to put a bloody person in the middle of MRP and the committee to say, no, we're not going to pass it on, than it is to start doing that on the field.
As long as I don't go down the Nickelodeon NFL route, then it's fine.
I don't know what that means either, but we'll just move on.
Star Wars round.
Yeah.
Exactly.
The whole thing here is just a farce. Like, it could have been fixed. Like, we're talking about all this stuff. It could have been fixed by the referee seeing it properly on the field and not showing the yellow card to start off with. Yeah. It could have been fixed by the VAR not getting involved and recommending the red card. Like, that's where you fix this.
Yeah. And it could have also been fixed by the MRP actually doing their job and going, there genuinely is
we've just pieced together why they won't do that. But that could have been fixed early on, and it wasn't. And that's a disappointing thing, because it ended up being one of the main reasons why we conceded a goal. Yeah. And we're trying to hang on rather than playing that great football that we're playing in the first 45 to 60 minutes of the game.
Also, a fun conspiracy theory for you. I don't know. I don't know whether it will have been true of the highlights you watched, but certainly of the live game, the first replay they were showing was freeze-framed just for a few frames of the initial Studs contact on Rufa. And they looked at that for a little while before moving on to looking at Rufa's contact with the other player. So conspiracy theory, maybe it in fact was referred for the initial Studs contact. And then Lucas was like, actually, I want to look at the next bit. Thanks. No, I'm good with that. It's just a tackle. Let's move on.
Conspiracy is good, but I believe what we see on the broadcast is not necessarily what the VARs are looking at.
Not necessarily. This is correct.
Yeah. So having seen some VAR footage, it's just like, it's almost 1 second just looping over and over sometimes. And we never see that on TV. We always just see a normal replay and then we go back a little bit. So it feels like it's two different mechanisms.
Where would you possibly get access to that sort of content?
Just some training videos that I've watched about it all. Anything else on the game that we want to talk about? Because I can't pitch in. It just was pretty disappointing to concede and then have a one-on-one draw.
The goal we conceded was soft. Oh, they only got back into the game because we were down a man. Yeah. I think we still played admirably after that. Yeah. But we definitely looked kind of a shell of what we had looked first half.
We've had the name Clayton Lewis yelled at us from the cheap seats. Frosty is getting on.
Are we saying he got better? Because he was not good round one and I thought he was all right this time.
I thought he was pretty reasonable. I thought he helped out a bit. He looked like he was more involved.
Yep, I would agree with that. I again have concerns about the back line. We haven't talked about that, but I think it was interesting to see in a few moments of the game who looked like they were actually directing the defense and setting things up. It looked like Laws, not Devere. Mm. And Devere was scratchy again. I thought Laws looked solid. So that was interesting to see, particularly there was a free kick or something like that where they were setting up a wall. And quite a few times as well, I saw Laws looking like he was directing Devere where he needed to be rather than the other way around like we've expected. So I don't know whether that's an actual shift in kind of who's in charge there or whether that's just that dynamic further developing, but an interesting one to watch.
I find that some people are just natural talkers.
Absolutely.
That was always my thing. Even if I was playing up levels and guys that were better than me, I was always telling them stuff. And that's, he might just be one of those guys.
Which I think is good because I think it looked better. So. I think the first game it looked very scratchy and disorganized, and I honestly don't mind who organizes it so long as someone's doing it. And so I think you may well be right that he's just, you know, found his voice and good on him.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of players you'll find that he might just be one of those guys, and there are players in different teams that do that really well, and so people don't notice because in the pro game there's always so much noise. There's been a lot of people kind of commenting on, you know, once the crowds have gone away, who talks and who doesn't, and how all these guys that are supposedly defensive leaders say nothing all game, and these other people that they think are kind of, you know, cursory are just yakking all game. I mean, Alaba, that everyone's really surprised that he runs a back.
There it is.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, there's the Bayern reference.
But everyone's
kind of like, we all knew it was coming.
He barely talks off the field. But on the field, apparently won't shut up. It's like, well, yeah, that's good. As you say, I've been impressed with Laws. I think he's, for a kid that's never played pro ball before, or, you know, he's played.
Who calls it pro ball?
We had Nickelodeon reference, so.
Okay, all right.
Nickelodeon pro ball, that's the thing, right? It's like Star Wars ball. I mean, that's really good if you have someone step up and you're not even noticing that he's off the pace and two games in. I don't know anyone you could have said.
I wouldn't even say you don't notice he looks off the pace. He looks on the solid. Pace. I think Devere, if anything, is the one who looked off the pace defensively. I wouldn't say he's been horrendous, but definitely when there's been a player caught out of position or a slight bad pass in there or whatever, every time I've noticed it, it's been him, not anyone else. So, yeah.
One thing that I'm hoping for Devere is he had a really scratchy early season last year. Yep. He's a slow starter, and I'm hoping that he just warms his way into the season. Yep.
But even then, a pairing of an older centre-back who can read the game well and lead the back line with a younger centre-back who can do all that cleaning up when you're out of position isn't a bad thing.
No.
We see it in good use across the A-League. We saw it with Durant and Foxy, for example, when Drew was starting to get on a little bit. We saw it with Drew and Siggy the other way around when Siggy was able to yell lots and Jura was able to clean up a bit for him. We've seen it in effective use. So I don't think it's the worst thing in the world to have those two players complement each other.
No, absolutely not. And I think we all know that Devere's been asked to do something a little bit different this time. We know he's played A-League football before, but he's never been that kind of leader in a back line before. So whether that extra kind of role that's put on him a bit there is feeding through into a few small mistakes because he's trying to do, you know, some extra stuff. It's hard to say. And I hope he grows into that because, yeah, I think there's real potential there. He's definitely a good quality player. So hopefully that's just early season jitters and we're going to see that improve.
Yeah, I mean, I think what when you were talking about the older centre back who is positionally astute, I think that's part of his problem. He's a little bit out of position.
Yep.
And the problem is he turns like a beached whale. He just doesn't. So he's very hard.
I was going to say, how does a beached whale turn? But he doesn't.
Just, he honestly doesn't. And that's the problem. Is so when he's out of position, he gets caught out quite badly.
Yeah.
Stephen Taylor, not he didn't turn particularly well, but one thing he did really well was he read the game well and anticipated and he didn't get caught out. When he did, he struggled because he's a big unit, hard to turn, same as De Vere. So, I mean, that's kind of the one thing about Laws is he's actually still pretty big, but because he's young, he gets around, yeah. He turns and he's probably out of position a fair bit more than De Vere, but because he's young and can turn and,
make up for
and go,
yeah.
He can make up for it.
Yeah. Hey, let's jump on to the rest of the round, which was one other game, which was Newcastle Jets versus Western Sydney Wanderers. And the Jets went down 2-1. Wanderers won this. Zed Gordon, T. Russell. Goals for the Wanderers, and I have no idea who are those players.
Ziggy Gordon.
Ziggy Gordon.
Yeah.
That's not a name, Ziggy.
Yeah, it is if you're Scottish.
And Nigel Bogard got a consolation for the Jets. And the 73rd, the Jets seem to, on the balance of it, have way more shots. Whether that means they were on top or not, who knows?
I didn't see the game, but they were suggesting that Carl Robbins hadn't had it all worked out, cause seeing as he basically was coaching them up until the week before.
Right.
And then took half their good players and fucked off. So
yeah, makes
good
sense.
On him.
Yep. They leave the Jets on the bottom of the table, 2 games and 2 losses. Yeah. Perth haven't played a game yet, interestingly.
No, so they start off this round.
Yeah.
Well, they start off during this round.
Yeah,
I think that's purely down to the COVID.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. This weekend, Sydney FC are hosting the Wanderers, Sydney Derby. That's Saturday at 7:05 p.m. The Sydney Derby. Melbourne City, sorry, you didn't hear Frosty yell at me, which Sydney Derby? I was responding to. Melbourne City hosts Western United and not the Melbourne Derby after that on Saturday night. Newcastle Jets take on MacArthur on Sunday. And then we have some midweek games the week after. Central Coast taking on Wanderers and Perth Glory getting themselves underway against Adelaide United. That's rough.
And like, there's also Jets versus Brisbane Roar is also on or scheduled for the 20th. But
that happens early that night, doesn't it?
Yeah, but it has not yet been postponed, but it probably will be because of COVID.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. But yeah, Perth Glory going, that's the fourth round where they play their first game.
Yeah.
It's going to be some weird fixtures later on. And then Phoenix's next game, which we'll talk about next week, is against the Jets on the 24th. And that's the A-League, I believe. Which brings us to the National League, where Team Wellington had a 1-1 draw with high-flying Hamilton Wanderers. A goal to João Moreira. Mario Barcia. There we go. I didn't see any of this one
either. Absolute screamer. Yeah, beautiful, beautiful goal from well outside the box. A cross had come in, which was headed clear, and the ball was laid off by Zeb Harris.
Yep.
And
see, that's a name, Zeb. I'll give you that.
And Mario side footed it first time over the keeper and into the goal. It was really, really lovely. Yeah, it was great. Yeah, and the goal for Hamilton was a pen from Derek Tietu, for a handball by Ben Matta.
Was it a handball?
It certainly hit his hand. Under current interpretation, it was a pen.
Yeah.
However, he knew nothing about it. He was like standing up against him, marking him out of the game. And he's flicked the ball to go past, and it's hit his arm. Yeah. So
correct as per the rules. I don't like it.
Neither do I.
Yeah.
He knew nothing about it. Certainly, because they've taken intent out of it, and it certainly wasn't intent, but because you've taken that out of the interpretation, then it's definitely a handball.
Yeah. So disappointing result for T-Dubs, mainly because Auckland City got up 3-0 over Waitakere United. Although Hawke's Bay United did finally get a win over Eastern Suburbs, which was helpful for the teams at the top.
Just a fine result for Hawke's Bay too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They had a rougher point tally from the first half of the season than they deserved. And the Wenix held Canterbury to a 1-1 draw as well. That makes the table.
That was a fair result, I think, actually.
Oh, yeah? Did you watch it?
Yeah, I went along.
Oh, right, of course.
Yeah, the I'm trying to remember the goals. That's right. So the Weenix scored first. It was a scrappy byplay from a corner and rebounded to, I can't remember who the scorer's name was, but took a shot and that deflected off someone and went in. So it was quite a scrappy goal, but I felt they probably deserved it at the time.
Yeah.
Then Canterbury's literally gone straight back down the other end and scored.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so within 2 minutes. And that was it, basically. And
yep.
There wasn't a hell of a lot of opportunity outside that. It was two fairly evenly matched sides.
The first game back is always a bit cagey after the break, right? They're only on for 3 weeks, but it's a long time when players aren't necessarily training together a lot. And yeah.
I thought the Weenix probably edged it. They probably could have won, but yeah.
Yeah. That leaves a table looking with Auckland City on top for the first time this season. They're on 13 points. One goal ahead of Team Wellington, also on 13 points.
Still undefeated, Team Wellington.
Yeah, 3 wins, 4 draws. It's those draws that are really starting to mount up and take points away. Hamilton Wanderers 1 point behind on 12. Eastern Suburbs 1 point behind on 11. And then you drop back a little bit to the Weenix on 8 and Canterbury on 7. And then Waitaki and Hawke's Bay both on 6. So you're seeing that divide continue. I don't see Canterbury, Waitaki, Hawke's Bay jumping up into the top 4 and Weenix can't qualify for the semi-finals. So
Hawke's Bay's unlucky, but they've probably now left it a bit late.
Yeah, well, they're looking to make up 5 points on Eastern Suburbs or Hamilton Wanderers. Yeah. Hamilton's probably the most likely team for them to catch.
But looking at the way they performed on the weekend, I think they're going to make the playoffs.
Oh, Hamilton?
Yes.
Yeah, I think we've got our 4 semi-finals already. It's just what order. Knocking Auckland City off the top would be great. But unlikely at this point, I don't think. Auckland City, we're going to talk about, you weren't here earlier, Frosty. We're not talking about that. We're going to talk about that on the Patreon content. Yeah. So if you want to listen to that on the Patreon content, which I'm just going to edit this out because it's shit.
Boo.
Yeah, thank you.
It's natural.
So that leaves us with Auckland City taking on Hamilton Wanderers this weekend on Saturday. Canterbury hosting Eastern Suburbs on Saturday as well. Tino to have an away game as well this week against Hawke's Bay, which will be important. They don't trip up again against Hawke's Bay there. You kind of need 3 points from this and it's going to be tough. And the Weenix hosting Waitakere United, bouncing back from their 3-0 against Auckland. And on our Patreon content this week, we're going to talk about Auckland City in particular, and the Club World Cup. We don't know if they're going. Are they going to go? Anyway, jump on our Patreon at patreon.com/Phoenix City. Jump on the $5 tier and hear bonus content there. But other than that, anybody around the traps want to add anything to this week's podcast? This includes you, Frosty. I'll let you talk now if you want to talk, but yeah, don't think you do. I'm getting blank faces all around, so we're gonna wrap up there. Thank you so much.
You gonna watch the game this week, Pat?
I'm not gonna watch the game next week because there's not one until the 24th.
Exactly.
There we go. You tried to trip me up.
I did. I thought I had you too.
You didn't have me. This is pro hosting ability here. But yeah, that's the pod for this week. Thank you for listening. Jump on Patreon, support us. Otherwise, we're back next week with a preview of that Newcastle Jets game. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Bye.
This week decisions bring you.
PK League brings you.
Not even PK League. That's the scary
I've said
thing.
That so many times though.
It's like you are cursing
goal,
us.
Peak A League.
Yeah,
brings referring decision. Yeah. Peak A League. Everything is just so.
It's never going to bring you up because it's never going to be peak.
No, it's not.
Frosty forgetting his microphone brings you.
My daughter loves tennis.